Okay, well, hello everybody and welcome. My name is Lynn Anderson and I'm going to be moderating today's CIDR session. For those of you who are with us for the first time, the CIDR sessions are presented always on the first Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m. Mountain Time in Canada. All of the CIDR sessions, including this one, are recorded and available from the CIDR site. And I will post that URL in the text box so that you can access those recordings, and we will also have the PowerPoint available from the site if you're interested. Before we begin, I'm going to point out that we're now using a newer version of Illuminate, and I'm going to quickly go over some of the features for those of you who are new to this platform. As you can see in the whiteboard, there's four main sections to the platform. The audio window, which you will be using to interact using the audio, hopefully during the session we'll hear from you or after the session. There's also the chat window that can be used for that purpose. And you can send a message to the entire room, or if you wish to send a message just to an individual, you can use the drop-down, I'll show you here, the drop-down menu, which is right here, and select a person that you want to send an individual message to. Also, in the participant box, you can see that there are emoticons that you can use to indicate your pleasure or displeasure throughout this session. We hope it's just going to be the smiley faces and the clapping. And during the session, we are, yes, go ahead and play with those now if you like. And during the session, we're going to have a poll. And the poll that we're using today is going to be in the form of a multiple choice question. So you can select your answer by simply clicking on the corresponding letter A, B, C, or D that you see in the bottom of the participant box. I think in on the slide here, it's got a check mark and an X, but in our actual participant box, there's an A, B, C, or D, and you can click on those right now if you want to just find those and show us that you found those. Also, in the top menu, there's a little notepad that you can use to take notes throughout the session, and those notes can be downloaded to Word if you would like. Finally, we've set up a new feature here in Illuminate. And that is when you leave our Illuminate platform, a survey will pop up. And we would really appreciate it if you could take a moment. It's a very, very short survey. And fill that out just to give us some feedback on the session and on Illuminate. It's very helpful for us for planning for future CIDR sessions. And finally, just for a little fun today, I thought it would be nice to see where everybody's coming from. And we're going to do that by clicking on, you'll see a little wand that is to the left. I'll show you, it's just to the right there, to the left of the map of North America. And if you click on the map where you're coming from, it'll leave like a little sparkle or landmine there to indicate where everyone's coming from. I'll give you a moment to fill that up. Oh, we've got someone from Australia today and someone from the middle of the South Pacific. Oh, moved. Oh, Steve, wonderful, from Southern Cross University. Very glad you could join us, Steve. Now I'd like to introduce our presenters for today's session, Dr. Michael Power and Dr. Norm Vaughn. Dr. Power is the Programs Director and an Assistant Professor in Educational Technology at the Faculty of Education at Laval University in Quebec City. His fields of expertise include e-learning, instructional systems design of interactive learning environments, and educational gaming. He is the Deputy Director and Researcher with the Geoeducational 3D Project and a member of the CNIE Board of Directors, as we just mentioned, where he also serves as its Research Director. In addition, he's a member of the Board of Directors and a researcher with the Inter-University Learning and Technology Research Center. He's the author of A Designer's Log, Case Studies in Instructional Design, which was published by Athabasca University Press back in September of this past year. Dr. Norm Vaughn hails from the other side of the country, where he is an assistant professor in the Department of Education, Faculty of Teaching and Learning at Mount Royal University in Calgary, Alberta. He is an educator and researcher with interests in blended learning, faculty development, and K-12 schooling. Norm's teaching background includes graduate and undergraduate courses in educational technology, K-12 education in Northern Canada, technical training in the petroleum industry, and English as a second language in Japan. In addition, he's been involved in several consulting projects with book publishers and higher education institutions to develop online courses and resources. He recently co-authored the book Blended Learning in Higher Education, which was published by Josie Bass back in 2008. And he's published a series of articles on blended learning and faculty development. Norm is the associate editor of the International Journal of Mobile and Blended Learning, and both he and Michael serve on the editorial boards of multiple scientific and education-centered journals. Today, Michael and Norm will be enlightening us on the Blended Online Learning Design Network, of which they were the founder and co-founder, respectively. So I will hand over the mic now and give you the opportunity to get started on that.
Lynn, thanks so much for the introduction. Wonderful. Happy New Year to everyone. I knew you know you had a choice of where you'd want to be today, and thanks so much for spending the time with us over the next hour. I know it's terrible to start with an apology, but Terry mentioned we've been having some cold weather in Alberta. I just recently got back, and I don't know, as I get older, my body just can't handle it. So I've got a very bad cold and a cough today. So it's not an audio problem, it's my voice. So my apology for that. What Mike and I'd like to do over the next hour is really engage you in a conversation about blended online learning design and really give Mike credit for getting this going. So what we thought we'd do is just our perception of the context, what's happening in higher education right now, specifically campus-based higher education, then introduce you to the concept of blended online learning, take a look at a pilot study that Mike and I conducted at two institutions. What we'd really like to do is share with you the lessons learned and also hear from what you're doing in this area as well. Just in the pre-introduction, Lynn was asking people to comment on what they're involved in. It's amazing just how many people are involved in different forms of online and blended learning. And last but not least, Mike's going to give us an overview about the Bold Research Network that I've just had a tiny bit to do with. It really has been Mike and his doctoral students, and they're doing some really exciting work, not just in Canada now, but internationally. So to begin, as Lynn mentioned, where we work. We work across different time zones, and it's wonderful to have Joanne with us today from Nairobi. Also, the gentleman Steve from Australia. One of the challenges of using synchronous communication is always the time zone, but what we're finding with our students, if there's value, they're willing to engage in a synchronous format like this online. So I'm from one of the newest universities in Canada, along with Grant McEwen in Edmonton, at Mount Royal. Geez, kudos, if you ever have a chance, I spent Christmas in Quebec City, had a chance to visit Mike, we had a wonderful lunch and meal together in the old city. There is a place that really knows how to celebrate winter, just a plug for Quebec City. The world-round winter carnival is coming up the end of January, early February. I don't want to put too much pressure on Mike, but if you ever want to have a great time in Quebec City, be sure to spend some time with Mike. So, the topic of today, and Rick, I saw you picked up on it. Mike always loves a theme. Our theme today is shaken, not stirred. We do. We feel like undercover agents, 007. So our perception is that there's some things, some very significant events that have been taking place over time at both our institutions, and we're really seeing these come to a head. So a couple things we've observed in terms of the academy is that things are shaking. I know a number of you are from Alberta. I think this is happening not just in Canada, across the world. There really is a crisis in terms of cost. Just the money to run these institutions just isn't there anymore, and the demands we're placing on students in terms of tuition is just astronomical. So the first thing we're observing is just this issue of cost. The second thing that we're noticing as well that comes with cost is often increased class size, decrease in services. So just questions about the quality of education that students are having at higher education institutions today. And then to top it all off, is just the question of access, just the growing demand for higher education today. A couple of things we want to point out is some of you, I know where you were at the World Congress on e-learning in Vancouver back in October. Wonderful keynote by Terry. Also a wonderful keynote by John Daniel. And John Daniel, he's the Chief Executive Officer of the Commonwealth of Learning. And just his talk about the demand is just it's skyrocketing. And in order to meet demand for higher education, if we did it with a physical plant, we would really need to be building a new university every week, which is just out of the question. The other thing is Rozovsky mentions that there really is no room for these millions of students anywhere on campus, whether that be in continents like Africa or specifically here in North America. We are out of space. So it seems that the academy is shaken, but our question, are faculty stirred? Class sizes on institutions like Laval University, where Mike's from, Mount Royal, where I'm from, and also do work with USC, class sizes seem to get larger. People seem to be getting pissed off, but the same thing seems to be happening, and we still be focusing on these large physical classrooms where we're primarily transmitting information to students. They say, you know, it just goes from an overhead or a PowerPoint slide onto the students' notes. None of the information passes through anybody's mind. So we've got all these things happening, but is it? Is it business as usual? And we'll turn it over to you in a minute. Do you see any changes on your campuses? So some of the observations Mike and I have made, and again, these are observations just at our institution. We'll open it up in a minute to see if you share our comments. But there obviously is the demand, and we see some things happening in terms of distance learning and online learning. Big plug, obviously, for Athabasca University, Canada's open university. I see that we've got folks here from Royal Roads University. But for Mike and I, at our institutions, where are the full-time tenured faculty when it comes to distance and online learning? At our institutions, and again, this is just our observation, that online learning is mostly a function being serviced by sessional and adjunct faculty. It's sort of an add-on, and it seems to be still just something that's happening on the side at campus-based institutions. So what we think, you know, previous attempts at stirring up that faculty just don't seem to have worked. Distance education, again, no criticism to Athabasca University, but my observation here at both Mount Royal University of Calgary, still something that's done on the side through continuing ed. There really hasn't been a degree of buy-in by full-time faculty. It still hasn't gone mainstream. Even with the advent of sort of this idea of online learning, you know, anywhere, anytime, we've got people, the adjuncts, the sessionals, a lot of sort of technical people working in that area. And blended learning, you know, wonderful. Give Randy Garrison and myself a bit of credit in terms of the book we put together. But what we're observing is a lot of the blended learning is still has a high campus-based component, which is wonderful if you're in an urban area, but it doesn't begin to address the needs of off-campus students in our province of Alberta. Still a large rural population here in the north, and it really doesn't get at international students as well. So to turn it over to you folks, just for a moment, what do we do here? Mike and I perceive, and again, this is our perception, that we've got a bit of a crisis taking place. Curious to know, is this happening at your institutions, and how are you going about addressing that? So what I'm going to do is, Lynn's been sort of scoping out questions here. I always find there's that pregnant pause. I'll wait for a minute, but I'm going to turn the mic over to anybody who wants to grab a mic. Is this something you're observing? Is there a real crisis here in terms of the cost of higher education, the quality concerns, and accessibility? Over to anybody who wants to talk, and I'll scan to see if questions have come up in the box.
Hoping that my microphone's working. I'm Steve Wright. I work at Lancaster University in the UK, where the government's just announced a sort of 16% cut to the university budget as of next year. So the big thing that we face, particularly on campus, is that a lot of students, they pay fees, which would be equivalent to about $5,000 Canadian a year. And there have been cases of students, there have been a written contract made with lecturers who are obliged to do a minimum number of hours of teaching. And anything online is just regarded as being a cheap get out, but not equivalent. I mean, the most radical ones that I heard of was when there was a strike recently. A student actually went up to a lecturer and said, right, you owe me £12.32. I've calculated how many hours per year my fees are equivalent to, and you went on strike, you owe me this money. And in that kind of context, I think blended learning is just seen as, a cheap get out. It isn't, but how you change student perception and student demand when students are becoming increasingly consumers, I think it's going to be a massive challenge.
Steve, thanks so much for sharing that. Similar instance at the University of Calgary, just a real uproar. We're facing significant budget cuts here in the province of Alberta, and a lot of things happened right before the beginning of the semester. For example, in the first year science courses, biology, physics, and chemistry, every second week lab was cut, and the idea was, well, maybe we can do it through blended or online learning. And again, there wasn't a lot of instructional design or thought put into this. It was just, here's a way that we can do this by saving money. No real issue, no real examination about the quality. And Wendy, I'll just turn it over to you. I notice you've got your hand up.
Hi, folks. Good to see some familiar names here. I'm coming in from the East Coast, and of course we face the similar situations here. And I think it gets right down to that idea of where can we shave a dollar here and a dollar there. And we're finding that in a lot of cases what we're doing is not according the enough value to the supports that are necessary in order to actually launch and maintain those e-learning courses. They think sometimes that if you design that course, you launch it out, and there it is, it's gone. Terry had mentioned the idea that distance education is akin to some of the old style correspondence courses. We still have that from the faculty here as well. And it's also the idea of when do the professors who are asked to do so much more with so much less time and resources, when do they learn themselves how to learn how to teach online? Many of our professors here are researchers first, not teachers first, and that does create quite a bit of a different look from a pedagogical perspective as well.
Wendy, thanks so much for sharing that, because again, don't want to sound like sour grapes, it's just because it's freezing here in Calgary and I've got this cold. But same thing at the University of Calgary, when times get tough, who do they go after? It's usually the support staff. Unfortunately, those are the easiest people to lay off. And again, those are the key people, as just from my perspective, is how important is we take a team approach if we really want to offer quality online courses. And those are the key people in IT, the library, and of course that instructional design support, like Wendy, like you said, is providing faculty not only with the time, but the instructional design strategies to redesign your course. Now, my apologies, we'll make sure we've got questions built in throughout the semester, but again, we're always up against time, it seems, in these things, but that's, as we'll see in a minute, the beauty of a blended online environment. We'll have this wonderful synchronous session, but then we can follow up through email and other ways. So with that, I'm going to turn it over now to Mike to talk a little bit about this bold framework that he's developed.
Gee, thanks a lot, Norm. You've done a great job of setting this up. I've been involved in distance education and online learning, well, distance education since the 80s, in different roles, managing, research design, different aspects. And now I'm on faculty here at Laval and pretty well doing the same thing, just getting paid to do research, which is nice. So over the years, I've noticed that there has been this disconnect between distance education and the dual mode universities. Over the last 25, 30 years, most universities have some form now of distance education or online learning, but there's always been the disconnect with the core faculty. And to respond to the needs that we've seen, that Norm mentioned earlier, the cleavage between supply and demand, we have to do something. We have to have greater faculty buy-in to meet the needs. And that's why we started thinking about different models. And I was very much inspired by Norm and Randy's contribution, blended learning, also to all the literature on online learning, to Hiltz and Harassim and all the authors who have spoken about to this issue. So we started talking about this a couple of years ago about what blended online learning is, and I see it as really the second generation of online learning. We've now gone into a new generation, I believe. So today, in a few words, you know, we'll try and get to the bottom of what it actually is. As I was saying, a little plug here for our books. This is Norm and Randy's right here on the left and mine on the right. Of course, it's been based on also an awful lot of other literature. So basically, this is our way of analyzing what blended online learning is. In the left-hand side, you've got traditional higher education, which typically is faculty-led and in synchronous mode on campus. And in the upper right-hand corner, you've got online learning, which is just the opposite, really, which is usually system-led and is, for the most part, asynchronous. Usually when you talk about online learning, this is what comes out in the literature. It's asynchronous. It's 24/7. Okay. Now, blended learning is really bridging this because, as Norm said and in their book, they very, very clearly enunciate the place, the position of blended learning, which is part on campus, part online. And with the alternates that is possible, it allows for greater capacity. Universities have greater capacity. Students benefit also. And in the recent report that came out in 2009, published by the Department of Education, big plug for blended learning, which just seems to obtain the best results. Now, this is where I position blended online learning, which is completely online, but it has both synchronous and asynchronous components, which are blended in different to different degrees. So that is that's the territory. That's how it's staked out. So basically, inspired by Garrison and Vaughn, BOLD is the stimulus and complementary integration and implementation of an asynchronous mode learning environment, such as an LMS, CMS, and a synchronous desktop conferencing environment. Okay, so you've got the best of both worlds. That's what we're trying to do, to bridge, especially for faculty who have that difficulty with time commitments and the amount of time it requires to put a typical online course up. So this way, they can really use and maximize the virtual classroom, which is a milieu with which they're very familiar. Okay, so basically, what does it look like? It looks like this, very simply. You've got the virtual classroom that we're using right now, and on the right-hand side, a very basic website, which many faculty already have. Let's take a closer look. So the virtual classroom is this. The good thing about it is that we can have speakers come in, as we're doing today. Sometimes very prestigious speakers, sometimes not. Okay, and the basic website, well, we have your syllabus up there, a study guide, quiz, resources, different things. A lot of these things we have already. It's just putting it out there, putting it up as a complete system, okay? Now, a typical BOLD graduate seminar. This is what it looks like. Three parts. First part, individual work. I think it's the basis of any kind of intellectual work. It all resides on individual effort. So they'll do readings, they'll do quizzes, different kinds of research, and they'll, in my courses, I'm aiming at the graduate level, because in a virtual classroom, you really can't have more than 15 or 20 students if you want a quality of interaction. So really, I have to frame this within graduate studies, okay? The second part, of course, yeah, then they'll access different resources on the website. Then the second part is teamwork, synchronous or asynchronous. They can work in whatever milieu they want. They decide. And then the final part is the weekly class, the seminar, graduate seminar. This is how we put it together. Okay, that's what it looks like. That's my framework. Now, question. With all you people out there, how many have you, have you taught a BOLD course, a BOLD-inspired course? No, you've not taught one. Yes, you've taken one. No, you've not taken one. So if you could answer the poll.
I'm going to give everyone a minute, and then I'm going to publish the poll on the slide here, okay?
Great. I just answered Terry's question. BOLD is really entirely online. It's got the synchronous component. It's got the asynchronous component. I'm really interested by the results here. I see 13% have taught something that is similar to a BOLD online design course. That's great. And also, more importantly, 23 people have taken a course that has some of these components. This is really interesting. Over to Norm.
Thanks. And we'll keep moving through, but Lisa brought up a really good question, Lisa. And what we're going to do now is focus on the pilot study results, because Lisa's commented in the chat box, students already have trouble with asynchronous, so what happens now when we layer this whole new skill set. It is interesting, Lisa, again, not that our sole role is to prepare students for the workplace, but I really see this to be a global trend, the use of these synchronous communication tools. And it's fascinating, not just in the workplace, but here in Alberta in K-12, we have a really, really big outreach program in terms of online learning for K-12. But even within the Calgary board, they offer a lot of the courses using a bold format. So it's going into the K-12 now. So Lisa, I know that there still is a digital divide in terms of, especially when it comes to literacy and fluency, but I think that these two skill sets are coming together. Anyway, I'll talk more about that in a minute. So what we'd like to do now is share some of the lessons learned that we had. I guess it's been, well, no, it's not even a year. Last spring, what we did is we looked at two universities, and as Lynn mentioned, I have a tendency to shoot my mouth off. So we're just going to call them University X and University Y. I'm going to deal with University X, and Mike's going to deal with University Y. And what we wanted to do was interview, do surveys, to get the perspective from the student, faculty, administrator, and instructional designer. So this was done at the end of last year, at the winter semester, at the end of the winter semester. We did it in the spring 2009 is when we conducted our study. And at the institution that I was involved with, there has actually been quite a long history of blended online learning. And what I mean by that is that teleconferencing, using the telephone, has been around a lot. And with the advent of the web in the early 90s, it was sort of telephone and email gradually moving into discussion forums and so forth. At this particular institution, they also used a tool called Centra that some of you may have heard of. It's a web-based synchronous conferencing tool, but it's relatively expensive. So it was in 2002 that University X set up their own Illuminate server, and out of that came a whole variety. So there isn't one set pattern, and I'll talk about that in a minute. There's a whole variety of ways that people are combining the synchronous sessions with the asynchronous learning. And now I'll turn it over to Mike.
Okay, thanks, Norm. Yeah, at University Y, they come from a long tradition of face-to-face education, instruction, and they have a long history of distance education. And then online learning started up rather slowly and small, and then we went to a complete replication of face-to-face using a bold model, and this is just starting up now. And there's also, of course, a lot of blended learning going on. So that's kind of the lay of the land. Over to you, Norm.
Again, I always feel like I'm flying a plane when I do this. Lisa, back to your question, what I find, again, you were talking not just about the student issue about mastering different tools, but about faculty as they move through his, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but what I found is when faculty can see how this tool can engage them in their research, how they can connect with grad students, other issues, they really come on board with using tools like Illuminate. Anyway, back to mine. I'm trying not to be too linear here. At my university, the primary focus for distance education, again, Mike and I are focusing at graduate courses, is in the professional areas of nursing, social work, and primarily in the Faculty of Education with both their master's and doctoral programs. Not that much different from Athabasca University. They've got a whole variety of thesis-based and courses that you can do online. There is a small residency component for the EDD, but they've even waived that if you want to do that completely online. And just in terms of the context, it's fascinating. And again, it's back to the earlier slides, just that increase in demand. The majority of students who are doing master's and doctoral programs in this particular Faculty of Education are doing it online. They're doing it at a distance. The other thing that's fascinating, and again, this is over 7 years from 2002, that core faculty are teaching both the campus and online. So we've really moved away from the online courses just being done by the sessional adjuncts. And Lisa, I'll talk about that as we go through about addressing your concern about how we've been able to get faculty on board with that. And I mean tenured, seasoned faculty. And again, with all the courses, there is an asynchronous and at least one synchronous component. Now, the synchronous component really is based on the needs, the course needs, the student needs. Some of them, it may be just at the beginning, an opening session for the community, a closing. Some of them can be weekly, so it can be quite a bit of online asynchronous. Is that there's weekly online, but then the students themselves are breaking into project areas, so it's not used just for delivery. It's used for collaborative teamwork at the graduate level. In terms of the learning management system, I think a lot of institutions are using Blackboard. This particular institution, just because some of the people that developed Illuminate were graduate students here, has a really sweet license with Illuminate. So every Blackboard site on this campus, not just the online, the distance courses, has an Illuminate classroom. And that's really made it nice because, back to your point, Lisa, it really has become seamless for both the students and the faculty. They don't even refer to the synchronous room as Illuminate. It's just a synchronous space. It's a space that they go to work. Mike, over to you.
Norm, this kind of reminds me, let me see, I'm going to go get a little picture here that I put together. Where is it? Here we go. Okay, there's Norm and I. There we are. Okay, so let me see. Sorry, I moved back. There we are with our tag team. Okay, so let me see. Getting down back to serious stuff. So at University Y, I wanted to mention earlier about 35,000 undergrads each student at each university, plus about what, probably 12-15% graduate studies. So pretty big major Canadian universities. And this is where we're at with the distance education program. This includes distance education in all its formats, and you'll see several formats in a few minutes, the kinds of types of distance education offered, about 26,000 students part-time. Okay, so we focused basically for questions of accessibility on the education and social sciences programs. Now, here are the types of distance education online learning. And there are a variety. This has been going on for 25 years. So you've got the old independent learning telecourses, which are still very prevalent. They still make money for the university. Then you've got the forum-based courses, which are really big, especially over the last 10 years. Virtual classroom, just beginning, like we're using right now, of course. And we also have a different type called expert conversations, and I'll explain that in a minute. Okay, so basically you've got your unpaced and you've got your paced, that's the vertical axis, and the horizontal, synchronous, asynchronous. Now, these different kinds of courses, and Bold tries to get right there in the middle. We want some parts to be unpaced, we want some parts to be paced, we want some parts to be in synchronous mode, other parts to be in asynchronous mode. So Bold is really trying to really get right there in the middle and provide a model which is flexible enough to meet a lot of needs. And again, I cannot overemphasize that Bold was really designed with the graduate seminar in mind. Okay, so this is an idea of proportions, okay? The independent learning courses are really are disappearing, really. They're being phased out. They're still important, but they're being phased out. The forum-based courses are pretty well holding their own. Especially, this is again undergraduate in this case. Virtual classroom on the rise, definitely. Also, the expert conversations are just beginning, and these are really courses designed for like postdoctoral students, for experts in different countries around the world. We're working right now with France, the University of Bordeaux, with which we've signed a strategic alliance. So Laval and Bordeaux are really joined at the hip. And what we're having is these conversations which are online, which are unpaced. People come in, people come out. It's all in synchronous mode, and this is starting to attract a little attention. We're working on it. Okay, now the question here, what type of distance education or online learning is most prevalent at your university? Over to you, Lynn.
Again, just use the A, B, C, or D in the bottom right corner of the participant box to make your choice, and I'll publish the results in just a moment.
Okay, thanks, people. Yeah, okay, so, okay, a lot, none, 34. A real blend here. D, yeah, the expert conversations, I'm not surprised because this is really something that we're just talking about, at least at our university. I think now we're over to Norm.
Mike, thanks so much for that. And what we'd like to do now with you is share some of the lessons learned from the study we did. Some of the key questions we were looking at was a comparison of on-campus versus online courses. And again, this is at the graduate level. Lisa, sorry, I keep picking up on your questions. Just, I have a long history of the faculty development and instructional design support as well. So focusing in on what the training and support required was to help faculty transition to this format, the training support, the transition, and some recommendations that we'd like to make to you based on our study. So just on that, What we did is Mike and I, we surveyed a number of, these are graduate students, and we tried to get graduate students who had experience with both on-campus and online courses. We interviewed 3 faculty members at each of our institutions, and we tried to get a range of faculty members from those sort of the early adopters, the lone rangers who'd been doing this for quite a while, to the newbies who just were quite still quite skeptical about it. We also tried to look at administration, the chairs, the deans of the faculty around the support that's required for this, and then talking to the instructional designers in terms of the type of support and their perspective about the transition as well. So those are the people that we dealt with. So it really was basically a qualitative study based on a lot of interviews with some surveys, but the surveys were basically open-ended questions. So what we'd like to do is just give you some quick feedback we heard in terms of students, and again, these are graduate students, makes sense. Probably the biggest thing we've heard from students all over is the convenience and the access. And it's fascinating. A large proportion of the students who are taking these online courses live in the same physical. They may actually live in the city. They may live in Quebec City, or they may live in Calgary. Just the hassle of getting up to campus through traffic, through getting babysitters, the other thing, all that kind of stuff. The other thing that really came out of the surveys is this idea of community. And again, Terry was one of the key people that was involved in this community inquiry framework, and how important that sense of community is, especially at the grad level, where it is more of a mentorship. You've got more of a greater distribution, I would argue, than even in an undergraduate class, of distributing not just the responsibility, but the expertise, the roles. And they felt there was much even sharing, more sharing going on when you had the asynchronous and the synchronous going together, rather than just a classroom format where people can often just lecture at you. Mike, over to you.
Thanks,
for your
Norm.
Student perspective.
Yeah, so the students are pretty happy. They're pretty happy campers, the graduate students. They have busy lives, you know, doctoral students, master's students. And given their family circumstances, this one says, even if I'm busy in class, I'm still home. No parking fees, no driving. I choose to study where I want. And this goes back to what someone was saying about people with disabilities. They can create their own comfortable physical environment. Okay, they also say that in qualitative terms, same quality. That's what's really interesting, is face-to-face, or even better, same group reflection process, more opportunity for conversation, easier to have guest speakers, lots of space for personal expression, saves me time. I think they're talking also not just about the synchronous, but the asynchronous. Don't have to get dressed up, even not even prepare a lunch. Norm?
Thanks, Mike. And just over to the faculty perspective, and Lisa, this gets at some of the issues you had. Why? Why would faculty want to do this? And again, altruistically, it's hopefully to improve the quality of learning for students. But we're all stressed out. We're all busy. How is this going to make my life easier or more engaged? And from my perspective, again, this is faculty that are mainly dealing with graduate students, teaching graduate courses, it's back to the convenience. Again, a lot of faculty members are traveling throughout the semester. They're going to conferences, they're on sabbatical, whatever. Just the ability to stay in connection with their students and be able to teach courses while they're away. The other thing, again, there's always enrollment issues. And I'll be selfish. A lot of us have pet courses. I teach a pet course on blended learning. And I don't think that course would go if it was a campus-based course. We just physically couldn't get enough students to enroll in that course. So in order for me to teach my pet courses, this has been wonderful to open it up. It allows me to offer these courses synchronously. The other thing, as we mentioned earlier, how easily it is to bring in external subject matter experts, not just in the synchronous sessions, but also in the asynchronous. So what you could do is maybe have students read, I'm sorry, Terry, to keep picking on you, but maybe they'll read one of Terry's papers. Terry participates in a discussion forum about that, but then we bring him into the Illuminate session, the synchronous session, to really hammer him about that paper. The other thing that I found fascinating is a lot of us, regardless of the technology, these classrooms are just not working for us physically anymore. The lighting doesn't work. We hate the fixed seatings. So what came out from my faculty is they felt they weren't trapped in a classroom anymore. They felt a lot more comfortable in these synchronous rooms like Illuminate. Mike, over to you.
Thank you, Norm. So you can see we can switch back quite fast. It can be done, kind of like in a ring. Okay, one student, a faculty I was working with, they were saying, at first, I wondered if the system would work reliably. It did, no glitches at all. Now here in Quebec, you have to realize that 75% of the population is hooked up to high speed. We've got a great backbone here. One said I needed some tech support to get going, but by week 4, I was on my own. So that addresses the issue about the skill set. I knew what I had to do and how to do it. One full professor said, this was the one of the most enjoyable courses I've ever given. I don't intend to go back into the classroom, you know, to get into that pet course. And another faculty, no difference. Norm?
I think you got one more.
Right. What I like is that I'm in my office and I have everything I need. This faculty member was telling me that before she used to have to traipse across campus, go to the classroom, take off her boots, you know, in Quebec City what it's like. So if I need to consult a book, an article, there it is. If I need a slide or a figure, I just snapshot it. It sure beats lugging my computer, that's what she said. And another one said I had to attend a conference in France during the term. Normally I'd have lost a class or two. This time I taught from my hotel room. Over to you, Norm.
Mike, thanks so much. And just from an administrator perspective, again, this is my perception just based on the pilot study, is that what happens, this has to be a meeting of the minds. There has to be a desire for the faculty to want to transition. You have to demonstrate the advantages of why you're going to move to this online blended format, because Lisa, like you mentioned, now you're learning just not asynchronous tools like learning management systems. You're going to have to learn how to use a synchronous tool like Illuminate. So what happens from my experience is this is mandated from above. Again, Steve, I think you mentioned it at Leicester at your institution. Is it just something that the dean, senior administration tells us to do as faculty? Our natural reaction is just to resist because we hate being told what to do. So it needs to be a meeting of the minds. The other thing I think that has to happen with administration is they've got to walk the talk. And I am. Just at the institution I was involved in, give a lot of credit to an individual, Dr. Charlie Weber, Associate Dean of the Faculty of Education, when this got going. Charlie took on an extra load. Even though he was doing administration, he started doing graduate courses and he did them in a blended format. So his idea was to demonstrate it could be done as an administrator, and he started mentoring a lot of the faculty members. So again, it's just not telling you what to do. Unfortunately, Steve, back to your comment, when I did talk to a number of his administrators, we're up the creek in terms of finances for institutions here. There is this idea of revenue generation potential, and I think it's a travesty, but our online courses, our online graduate courses are twice as expensive as the face-to-face ones. It's a cash cow. I hate it. But the other thing that I've really been impressed with at University of X is really getting everybody on board. And again, you know, it's what people are passionate about. People who teach, you know, phenomenology, hermeneutics, courses that they love, demonstrating how you can have that same level of engagement with students online. And this idea that it really is continuous professional development. It's a way really to reflect about your teaching practice and integrate your teaching and your service into that. Mike, over to you.
Thanks, Norm. Now, administration at our university are saying, well, this is very new, okay? Reaching students wherever they are, especially the graduate level, very interesting. As Norm was talking about the PIT courses earlier, a lot of these courses just won't fly. I had a colleague having that problem here, courses she'd offer, they just didn't fly, not enough enrollments. I go online, I get lots of enrollments. So there's fish out there. You just have to know how to find them. We can offer specialty courses, we mentioned that. Some students may find it limiting. There may be scheduling issues. Indeed, that was brought up today too, and there are. But what we're seeing is that graduate students, when given the choice, they'll opt. They want the community of inquiry. They want the community feeling. And one admin said, just too early to say. Over to you, Norm.
Thanks so much. The other thing that I've really noticed is just, again, and I think it's especially, I'm preaching to the converted here, how important that instructional design support is. And I think it's similar at Mike's institution, the institution I'm involved in. A lot of the people that are instructional designers are either grad students or former grad students as well. So they've had firsthand experience about what it's like to be in online courses that are completely asynchronous and those that try to blend the synchronous and the asynchronous. And it's fascinating, just some of the instructional designers that I interviewed, English is not their second language. It's not their first language, excuse me, it's their second language. And it's something it didn't dawn on me, is how important it is, again, with these courses, not only that you're having the reading practice of reading and writing reflectively, asynchronously, but by doing something like an Illuminate, and I hope you're able to do this as well, that with these Illuminate sessions or whatever using iVocalize, that you can record them and students can go back at their own time and go through and replay those parts that they didn't get. So again, how important this is for international students whose English may not be their first language. Mike, over to you.
I just want to follow up on what's been being discussed in the chat. This is like a three-ring circus, and I'm sorry. Some people may find this a bit disconcerting. Yeah, I think that some faculty members find it difficult. They have to have an open mind. I think it's really a question of attitude. And if we really believe in social justice, if our motivation is all about access and accessibility, then I think that faculty will tend to want to use whatever technology is out there, so long as it's reliable, to reach students, as I was saying, especially graduate students. There's a lot of interest in creating a kind of community of graduate students. And using this kind of technology, we can really go worldwide. So the instructional designers at our institution were saying, well, we're able to reach out to students who would not normally come on campus. Yep. We're able to do more in a virtual class than in a regular classroom because courses are better designed. We see that also. We see that having that basic website up, the faculty are putting a little more time into it than they normally would. Lower attrition. Man, I'm getting, get this, participation rates of 99% for every class every week during a term. Better for the student, can listen to the course. That's right. I have students from abroad. Very often they'll go back into the recording. One ID said, I'm worried about lower levels of design because, well, that's what you do, right? That's their job. Norm?
Thanks, Mike. This is wonderful. We've done it. What we're going to do now is start to open this up for discussion. And I'll be honest, these polls for me are a bit of a selfish thing just to see how many people are still listening. So what I'm going to do is, with Lynn's help, we're going to do a survey. So now that you've heard from us and we've vented a little bit about the issues, what do we do now? There definitely are some very significant issues facing us right now in terms of the cost of higher education, quality concerns, and number one, the access issue. So what do? Pretend none of this happened? B, dig a very deep hole and crawl in? C, go for an extended cruise to Somalia? Or D, consider trying bold. Again, we're being a little sarcastic here, but if you could just take a moment to poll, it helps us know who's still there or who's doing their email, that sort of thing. And what we'll do, let a few minutes for the results come in. We'll take some questions for a few minutes and then just turn it over to Mike just to talk about where he's been going in terms of bold research. Some really exciting things happening. Yeah, just two more slides. So maybe what I'll do is I'll just hold and move it over. We got back from the fire drill. Okay, that makes me feel good. I was wondering how come we weren't getting enough A, B, and C's. So I'd like to know what things you can do. Super. So Rick's put up a great question we'll go for in a minute about what you can do in synchronous that you couldn't necessarily do asynchronous. So good, we've got the poll results. Can we just pull those down just a little bit? Oh, good, we're only down to 21. So 65%, maybe not, yeah, bold. Considering other options. So what we'll do before we turn it over for the full questions, Mike, why don't we just finish the last two slides and then we can open up because I see some really good questions here we could tackle. So Mike, back to you.
Okay, thanks. Before I move on to that, I just want to respond to what Rick was saying. And I'd like to just see now if I can get this picture to come up. Let me see. Sorry. I'm having a little trouble getting it up. It must mean something. Here we go. Okay. There we go. Okay. So the difference between single mode and dual mode online universities, well, Athabasca, open. On the other hand, you've got the dual mode universities. And that is just, okay, tongue in cheek, having fun. Okay. No offense. So getting back to, my, that thing won't just disappear, will it? Okay. There we go. So my. Come on now. Okay. Now, what we're looking for is to work with people who are so interested in doing this kind of thing. Right now, we've got several doctoral students working on different aspects of BOLD. Some are more involved in the instructional design technology. Let me change colors here. Instructional design technology side. Some are coming from a distance education online learning side. Some are coming from the faculty development side. Some are from graduate studies. So they're all involved in BOLD in one way or another. So we'd really like to get in touch with people who are like-minded and to put our data together. And this is really coming from a dual-mode university standpoint, okay? This seems to be a booming area right now, and we think it's only going to get bigger to meet the needs. The single-mode institutions just cannot do it, okay? So let me see. I think that's about it. Thank you. And now we can, with the time left, we can chit-chat.
And chit-chat, and sorry to jump in, we'll keep going, but just, Rick, I think that was a really important point you made about, you know, what can we do in synchronous that we can't necessarily do in asynchronous, and I would argue you can probably do everything in asynchronous, it just takes the time it takes. And my observation, and again, this is just based on my students in my graduate courses where I've used a bold format, it's what the students can do themselves. And I think, again, not that it's all about twitch speed and we have to have things done instantly, but being able to maintain the rhythm of community. Because what I found, the excitement thing is, again, I'm fortunate that with my Illuminate space, students have access to it 24/7. All they have to do is let me know in advance when they want to use it so I can bump them up as moderators. But my students, Rick, have said is how powerful it has been when they have to do collaborative work. Again, nothing wrong with asynchronous, Rick, but as you know, we're always under time constraints, especially when we're using the semester system. So, you know, I'm not saying people have left things to the last minute, but if they're working on a collaborative project, maybe they were redesigning a course together or they are evaluating something for an evaluation course, is just, they talk to me, is just how useful it is to be able to get together synchronously. They find it a lot more efficiently. They can do things offline, but if they can meet, even for 15 or 20 minutes, and, you know, Rick, as you know, it doesn't have to be through Illuminate, but Skype. And just, again, especially for many of our students, and I know, Rick, these are true for years at Athabasca, you know, cell phones are expensive to use, other things like that. So I'm just finding just how efficient they can be when they can get together 10 to 15 minutes synchronously online. So what I'm finding, it's more and more the collaborative group work. And what I'm finding, this is happening in my undergraduate courses as well. So sort of hog it, I'll turn the mic over to others. Steve, over to you. Great to see somebody's got their hand up. Steve, question for you.
One aspect which I don't think is clearly on that is the difference between part-time and full-time learners, which I think is one of the dimensions that people often look at the difference between distance and on-campus, but who the part-time students are and how they are managing their learning alongside often working full-time. I think it's a hugely significant division, and one of the things that we face as a big challenge, and I think this is coming bigger and bigger, is that all of the things about online learning and asynchronous learning are really billed as, you know, it's all flexibility. You especially if you're dealing with professionals or with postgraduate learning, so you've got to make the courses more and more relevant to the workplace, more and more flexible, more and more available to people who are working. But they've also got to be more and more relevant to their work, which requires enormous motivation and also starts to possibly feel a bit more like work. And I think that there's the thing with asynchronous that sort of online, no one can hear you not bother. Whereas if you've got a class you've got to be at, an evening class, so 7 o'clock, people come because it's scheduled, it's timetabled. And I think that you've got these sort of two things that are pulling in different directions. And we're starting to look into going towards very much this whole thing, partly just to have something scheduled, something that is there, it's recorded, like this Illuminate session. If you can't be there for the time zone or work or whatever, but actually maybe putting a bit more structure in might help. I don't know if other people have got any thoughts on this, but, you know, have we almost gone too far down the asynchronous, ultra-flexible, and not realized the cost for the learner in terms of just how much they then have to be motivated, really, really clear with their time, and so on. I think there's lots of things in that, but I wondered if you've got any thoughts on those things I'm picking up.
Sorry, boy, I was jumping there real quick. I'll let Mike talk as well. My perception, Steve, is it depends. It's not one size fits all, because I think there really is a tension here about, you know, how much flexibility we are providing, because that's often why various students at various levels in their life want to do the online courses. But on the other hand, I tend, just my pendulum swinging more towards what you mentioned in terms of the pacing and the accountability. Again, I think it's wonderful, especially at the graduate level, to have that flexibility. But just my perception, some of the complete asynchronous courses I've taught, and this is based on self-perception of me and my students, is just people leaving it to the last minute. I think it's a natural inclination. When it's out of sight, it's out of mind. And by having these synchronous sessions, again, they can be a killer with time zones, but usually I have at least one international student, if not two, in any of the grad courses I teach, and they're willing to make it, and it's not a sacrifice for them. And again, there has to be a reason that they're having that synchronous session. It's not just me disseminating more information that they could listen to, like a webcast. There's an accountability thing. Either they're going to present something or there's something. So, Steve, just for me, and again, this is me being an old school, probably behavioral psychologist approach, it really helps from my perspective to move students through the exercise. The other thing I'm observing, Steve, this is here in Calgary where we've got a lot of head offices in the oil industry, and again, it's not all about preparing our students for the workforce, but this is second nature. This is the way the workforce operates in the city that I'm based in. Sorry, over to other people.
I just wanted to mention, Norm, that I just put up this map of Central and South America and North America simply because I was in Mexico not long ago and gave a talk at the Monte Tecnológico de Monterrey, and we were talking about how there are very few time zones really between Mexico, Central America, and South America, especially the Spanish part. Three, maybe four at the most, one, two, three, and there's so much potential for sharing. Let me just give you one idea. Let's say a university in Chile wants to launch a PhD program, which is very focused, they're all focused, but we want to make it very specialized. They can share that with Argentina, they can share that with San Salvador, they can share that with Mexico, they can, you know, these are the kinds of things that we're looking at now and I think have a lot of potential, especially at the graduate levels. That's what we're focusing on.
Just one more point, because I saw Terry come up. The other thing that I've been noticing is how we've all been transitioning our work, is that really moving away from sort of that, you know, student-faculty interaction. I think it's John C. Lee Brown who talks a lot about sort of design-based learning and really studio-based learning, trying to create our classrooms more like a studio where students are working on projects, inquiry-based projects and things like that. In my observation, and I'll put her email up, but Susan Crichton, she's a professor at the University of Calgary here. She teaches a course on digital filmmaking, and that's the way that she runs her sessions. They're studio sessions. It's not just, you know, polling and all these little gimmicks and tricks. It's as soon as the students get in, they're in their breakout areas, but they're really working on studio work. They're really constructing. She can go into the different rooms, just like you could in a classroom, going into different pods of students or into different labs. So really, really creating an environment where students are taking more responsibility, and we're just not using this to transmit information, because that's one of the dangers I find with this, is that you can just use it to transmit content.
I just wanted to jump in and mention that there was a poll conducted by CBS, not big enough, I guess, and 12%, according to the New Year's resolutions, 12% of people want to further their education. Do you know how many people that is? Woo!
And back to you. It looks like we're at the top of the hour.
Thank you. You were reading my mind there, and the last thing you were talking about there relates well into our next session. You were talking about collaboration between North and South America, and our next CIDR session is about binational learning and the internet and some projects that have been going on in that area and grassroots experiments in global education. And that's going to be held on Wednesday, February 3rd, and by William J. Ignatoff from Queen's University in Kingston. And I'm hoping a lot of you will be interested in that and joining us next month for that session. And I want to take this moment to thank our presenters, Michael and Norm, so much for the time you've given to us here today in CIDR. It was an excellent session, and I can tell how passionate everybody was on this topic. The text, I don't think I've seen the text scroll this fast ever in a session. There was so many comments, and I'm going to do my best to transfer this text and make it available from the CIDR site along with the PowerPoint and the recording. I think there's a way I can do that, and I'm certainly going to give it a try because there was some really valuable comments and questions made in the text box today, and I apologize if we weren't able to get to all of those. It was absolutely an excellent session, and I'm hoping we have more people available to join you in your bold research. Okay, so thank you very much for this, and I'll hand the mic over for any last minute questions or comments.
Just wanted to say thanks to everyone, and again, I think on one of the slides, or if you Google us, it's pretty easy to find, but just take a look. Mike's done a really nice job at putting this bold network site together, and again, if we had more time, again, always under the time that's created this, is just to hear about some of the fascinating, he's got doctoral students working on some really interesting distance and online learning projects.